Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte clear liners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you could pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
ESPN's Matt Bowen joining us this week, but, you know, and I'm sure, Matt, you'd probably agree with this too. Second most important job is ESPN. First most important job, DB coach at IC Catholic. Came off a state title in 2022. How was your 2023 season? Are the kids doing good?
Yeah, we did. We went to the state quarterfinals this year. We moved up. So we went to the Chicago Catholic League, which in Illinois is like the SEC. You know, Chicago, Mount Carmel, Loyola Academy. You play big-time opponents, big-time environments every week, and there are no – what we learned real quickly, there are no off weeks, okay, is that every week's going to be physical, every week's going to be highly schemed. You're going to see Division I athletes. You're going to see high-level football players on both sides of the ball, really at all three levels of the field and on special teams. So for us, it was an adjustment. We had a great regular season, went 7-2, and went to the state quarterfinals. Yeah, went to the state quarterfinals. We're playing St. Lawrence out of Chicago, another Catholic League team, and – game came down in the end. 5 seconds left. They ran power read and got in the end zone. That was the end of the season right there. But it was an awesome experience. It really was. We grew as a football team. We had a lot of guys that are going on now to play at the college level, at all three levels. We got, you know, a tight end going to the SEC at Texas A&M. KJ Parker, wide receiver DB, is going to the University of Iowa. We have an outside linebacker going to Yale. A couple of D2 kids, a couple of kids going NAIA. And I want to say 3 or 4 more kids going to play D3 football. So that's one of our ultimate goals. And my goal as a coach is to develop the player so when they get to their senior year, they can get recruited, get financial aid, and go play college football. So I tell the kids all the time, whether it's D3 football, whether you're playing Michigan, Ohio State, the game is still the game. It's ball is ball, right? That's what we always say, ball is ball. And if you're playing college football, you're going to have a great experience, have an opportunity to get a great education. And I think when you're playing college football, it's going to force you to be accountable, have time management skills, be professional in every single thing that you do because you are being held accountable. I think it sets you up for life. So it was a great season for us, and we'll go back at it again next year. We'll be a much younger team. And it's interesting for me. So I've been at IC for 10 years now.
Wow. Already.
I'm going to coach my son next year. So my son, Grant, will be a freshman at IC next year.
That's awesome.
Be an outside linebacker, tight end. But it's been fun to coach him, too, and watch him develop. And I coached him at the younger levels. I coached also the last 3 years, a team called the Elmhurst Bears. So it's a Pop Warner program in Chicagoland, Pop Warner, and they would practice after us. So I'd be on the field with the high school kids, and we started a little later, so about 4:30 to 7, and then I'd be from 7 to 9 with the younger kids. So it was a long day, and a long day of coaching, but – it was great to coach my son at that level, and I'm excited to get him up to the high school level and be part of our program because, as you guys know, we've talked for a couple of years now how I would say the word is passionate I am about it, but how much it means to me and my family, and this is just another step in that.
So 2028, you got another Bowen playing for the Hawkeyes. That's the plan.
He's 14 right now. We'll see. That's what I was 14. Let's put on some pads. Let's get in a varsity football game first.
Yeah, no pressure, kid. Well, despite that extremely busy schedule, we are pleased, as you said, to have you back on, you know, not for the first time. You've been here. You're a friend of the program. We love having you because of that insight, because of your familiarity at all levels of football, from Pop Warner all the way up to the NFL. And that gives you what we think is a unique perspective, and we're extremely pleased to have it on the show. One of the coolest things that came out of our conversation when we had a drink at the Combine was the fact that you knew J.J. McCarthy. And you said, yeah, I know J.J. And I thought, well, sure, he's an ESPN analyst. Of course he knows J.J. He said, no, I coached against him in summer camps. And I was like, oh, you know him. And a lot of people are struggling with trying to put a bead on J.J. McCarthy in this draft. And so immediately I thought, that's what we're going to talk to Matt about. So we came up with draft enigmas, folks that are maybe not the cleanest profiles in the draft. And we let you pick three. We each picked one. But we're actually going to start off with J.J. because obviously he's the talk of this draft. He is a player who is on the rise, according to all reports. Everything we get coming out of the team sessions is that he's done extremely well in person, on the board. So why don't you talk about JJ, some strengths, some areas he might improve, and then we'll go into all those things off the field.
Okay, sure. I think the first thing you notice with JJ McCarthy is, one, is poise and composure. Okay, we don't talk about that enough. I remember when I was doing the NFL matchup show with Greg Cosell and Sal Palantonio. And look, I respect Greg maybe more than anyone in this business, of how long he's been doing this and how detailed he is in studying tape, taking notes, and what he looks for at the quarterback position, especially. And that's one of the things we put together. We put together this list for one of our draft shows of the key traits you have to have, right? First thing I always talk about, right, guys, arm talent, the physical tools, and those are key parts of the position. I'm not disqualifying those at all, but the ability to play with poise and composure is a great one. Is a great one to have. And I think you see that consistently with JJ's tape. When you see it the most, in big game moments, right? Third downs, inside the low red zone, on the stage against Ohio State, the stage against Alabama, the stage against Washington. The Alabama game really sticks out to me because I don't think JJ made a lot of high-level throws in that game where you would look at that throw and say, well, man, I got to put this on a show, right? Or I'm going to post this on Twitter. But he made the throws, took the throws that were available, I think is the best way to say it. And in critical moments, he put the ball where it's supposed to be. I think he's an underrated athlete in terms of in a pro system now, right? The ability to attack the edges on boot, to play outside of structure. He's very good outside of structure, very good throwing on the move. Smart with the ball, very smart decision maker, right? Again, another trait we don't talk about enough. That's a key one for Jaden Daniels as well. When I watched tape on Jaden Daniels at LSU, the ability to make smart decisions with the ball, keep your offense out of trouble, keep drives moving down the field. I think he's got good pocket mobility. When I look at pocket mobility, to me, that's the ability to step up, to slide. I use the term to reset your throwing window, right? Mm-hmm. When things get muddy inside that pocket, to move, to find space, keep the eye level up, and deliver the football. I think that's another strength for him. The arm talent, guys, he doesn't have Caleb Williams' arm. You know, we know that. He doesn't have Joe Milton's arm. No one has Joe Milton's arm, but you know what I mean.
It's upper
level arm talent. But again, if you can throw on time, play with rhythm in a pro offense, you can be successful. And those are the things you start to look at JJ and you say, okay, he doesn't have out of this world traits, right? But again, playing that quarterback position isn't always about those key traits. And those are the things I really look at him in terms of being able to process well. And there's things he has to get better at. Look, mm-hmm. I think he could play, I use the term accelerated vision, okay? Same thing as saying anticipatory skills, right? Mm-hmm. I think JJ can have a stronger sense of accelerated vision. I think at times you can throw with more timing and rhythm, right? And I think at times you can get the ball out much sooner on vertical throws. I don't think mm-hmm. he's been as accurate as he wants to be down the field. And at times, because the ball's not coming out as quickly as it should. Underneath, okay, a couple things about JJ underneath. And I know his quarterback coach very well, Greg Holcomb. Works here in Chicago, Next Level Athletics. I have a great relationship with him. He works with our kids at IC Catholic. I think he's one of the best. And he's done a great job with JJ of teaching him how to escape, how to extend, how to play outside of structure, but also inside the pocket. But I think there's one thing JJ can improve on. At times, the accuracy struggles on underneath throws. Talking mm-hmm. about speed outs, you're talking about hitches. You know, that's where his mechanics can be a little bit stronger. Because I do think he's got repetitive mechanics. It's the thing Greg and I talk about all the time with the quarterbacks. Mm-hmm. Do you have repetitive mechanics? You know, the greatest player ever played that position, Tom Brady. When you watch Brady on tape, everything looks the same all the time, right? Mm-hmm. 3, 5, 7 step drop every time. You know, the upper and lower body are tied together. I think JJ does show that at times, but you want to see a stronger sense of that, especially in the quick game underneath, the 3-step passing game. I think at times his footwork is not tied together to his upper body, and that forced him to spray the ball just a little bit. We talked about the second reaction ability, but also the key thing to me, guys, with second reaction ability is because the position has changed so much, right? So everyone mm-hmm. is so athletic in what they do. The days of when I played against Drew Bledsoe, right? Those days are kind of gone, right? Yeah. And look, Bledsoe had his own traits that threatened defenses because he could throw the ball 80 yards down the field.
He's going to get a gun, yeah.
You're playing cover two. You're not at 15. You're lining at 18. Just give yourself a chance, right?
Yeah.
The days of just a drop-back thrower. It's so hard to win just as a drop-back passer now. It's so hard because you have to win pre-snap, right? You mm-hmm. have to win consistently pre-snap and understand late coverage rotation, understand where you're going with the football consistently, because you're not going to be able to create on your own. Okay, and I do think JJ has the ability to create on his own as both a runner and a thrower. We talk about his second reaction ability as a thrower, but look at the tape too. You watch him, he can get outside of trouble. And I do think he does a very good job of keeping his eyes down the field when he does escape, because that's a tendency too with younger quarterbacks for that eye level to really drop. And again, that's when things go south and you leave plays in the field. You know, and look, I'll be honest. I think he's a very interesting study because he doesn't have games where he's throwing 45 passes. You got to remember this with JJ. He played two games without, or multiple games without his head coach, right? Mm-hmm. So that's a big thing. You know, and everyone always goes back to that Penn State game, right, when they ran the ball every play of the second half. You know, that was an interim head coach trying to win a football game. And that's what he felt best to win the football. That's his job. You know, if as a player, I'm not going to question that. That's my head coach. But that's what he felt in that moment to win the football game. I think if Harbaugh's there, it's a much different game plan in the second half, right? Much different game plan of what they're trying to do, what he's trying to get out of the quarterback position. So it's such a unique study because he doesn't throw with a ton of volume. It's a very run-heavy offense. On the flip side, the offense does translate very well. Okay, we're not talking about a young thrower that's coming from a spread offense that is 70% RPOs, right? This is a quarterback that played in terms of pro-style fundamentals, in terms of a 3- and 5- and 7-step drop under center, in terms of running bootleg with his back turned to the defense, which, yeah, again, you don't see from spread teams ever.
Yeah, it's shotgun 95% of the time. Every fake is, I'm still facing the defense. I don't get to see where, you know, it's different. Did he do that in high school against you guys? Was he a guy who turned his back to the defense in high school, or did he have to learn that?
Yeah, he played at Nazareth Academy before he went to IMG his senior year, because we didn't have football that year. And so, yeah, that was COVID year. So we had a spring season. That wasn't a real season, in the spring. So he went to IMG. But when he played at Nazareth, he did a bunch of everything.
Yeah.
Tim Racky's the head coach at Nazareth. You know, my mom taught with Tim Racky back at Driscoll Catholic really? For a long time. I've known Coach Racky for a long time. Outstanding football coach. And he had JJ set up to do everything. JJ attacked all three levels as a high school thrower. He uses mobility quite a bit. And he, look, like we were saying pre-show, if you're being talked about as a potential top 10 pick, well, imagine what you were in high school. Okay. Imagine you were really good. Okay. Let's just put it that way. You were different than everyone else in terms of what you can do at the position. That's how it was in high school. But again, it's just such an interesting study because not that the tape is limited, the volume is limited, right? Mm-hmm. The number of reps you can watch are limited in terms of what he does as a thrower. It doesn't mean it's a negative on him. That's just the situation he came from. And ultimately, what my answer to that is, he just won a national championship, right? That's my ultimate answer. This guy just won a national championship that went through Ohio State, Alabama, and Washington in the final three games of his college career and played really good football. And so I think that's one of the reasons you're starting to see him rise is because of what he can do in those stages and also what you get with him off the field. Incredible football character, high football intelligence, leadership traits. And again, you can't see in the tape. You got to be in the building with him. You got to be his coach. You got to talk to his coach about that. But that's, to me, the intangibles of the position are so critical when you're talking about quarterbacks, much different than talking about a safety, much different than talking about a wide receiver. You have to be a manager of people. And in the NFL, you got to be a manager of grown men. So it is a big jump. And obviously teams in the NFL are seeing that JJ will be in a position to handle that aspect of the game.
He's probably going to go in the top five because everybody is going to be either trying to trade up with Arizona or the Chargers at five to get. If your job is on the line as a GM, do you feel comfortable taking JJ McCarthy in the top five?
If it's the right system.
Say it's the Vikings, right? Kevin O'Connell.
That's the one I'm thinking about. So I got a piece coming out for ESPN. And look, we can put a lot of guys to the Vikings. You put Drake May there, incredible physical tools, right? There's a lot mm-hmm. of guys you can put in that system. But if we're just talking about JJ and what he does, it's someone that, and I think in the National Football League, can be a very high-level ball distributor. And that's not a knock on him. know, a ball distributor is someone who takes the throws that are available, that plays within the system of the offense and has enough second reaction ability to make those plays outside of structure when necessary. But in Kevin O'Connell's system, some of the very defined pass game, a lot of play action elements, I think in that type of system, he would be forced to throw with more timing and rhythm as he develops because of what the system predicates from the quarterback position. Now, obviously, we all know you can't throw play action on every down in the National Football League. You can have to drop back as a thrower and make those plays. But again, go back to his college tape. When did he play his best? Was in those key moments. But I really like him in a system like Minnesota. So if I'm the Vikings and I trade up, but I feel comfortable with JJ as my quarterback, I would.
He's a fascinating guy. You talked about you know, how you see some of Jaden Daniels' elements there, and I think that's a fascinating correlation too because of where Jaden came from as a player and where he ended up. And I think that happened for McCarthy as well, and not to discount Arizona State for Jaden, but it was a very different experience than his LSU experience. With McCarthy, when you look at the tape and you go all the way back, you see a guy that definitely is physically talented, athletically talented, ran a lot more as a younger player when he came in as a sub. And then you see this crazy jump in arm strength, and that's that Michigan strength and conditioning program where the first couple of years he couldn't drive the ball. And then about midway through his third year, you start to see these throws that are just different. And you're like, wait a minute, he wasn't able to do that. But you see a guy maturing, physically progressing, the mental with that, of course. But now he can rip it. Like, he can get it 20 yards flat on a line. And from that point on, he's got that club in his bag, and he continues to add that to his mobility and everything else. So it's a similar sort of progression to Jaden, I think. It's just stretched out, but I don't think a lot of people compare those players, and I thought that was a fascinating sort of nugget for you to pull out and say, I see a little bit of these guys in each other.
Yeah, and I think, you know, Jaden Daniels is more explosive as an athlete in terms of his movement traits. There's no question about that. And I think Jaden Daniels will be schemed situationally in the NFL on design rushes. You know, you don't want Jaden Daniels having 10, 12 carries a game, but I always look at low red zone, 3rd and 2 to 6. That's when you start to use your quarterback design runs because it gives you an advantage. It gives you a numbers advantage to the play side. But there's no question in terms of, you know, I do see some similarities there. I'm not saying they're the same player. There are some similarities between the two. And then you have someone like Drake May who is different because of the physical traits. You know, someone who's 6'4", 6'5", 230 plus pounds, has the arm talent, has a physical element to his game, has a second reaction ability. And there's areas of Drake May's game you can look at and say, he's got to be more accurate in breaking throws in the middle of the field, right? He's got to see the field at a quicker rate. There's, you know, we can go through the list of quarterbacks. And again, that's why when you talk about this position, I brought up, you know, JJ in a place like Minnesota, the situation is so important. Obviously, the talent around matters. There's no question about that. But the coaching, type of structure you're going to put them in, the environment in the building, all that stuff comes into play when you're developing that position. I think that's why we see so many teams, not that they miss, it's just that they struggle in terms of setting the right path in terms of development for that player.
The hit rate on quarterbacks in the first round is about 30%. If we're considering hits being like, you know, top 15 quarterbacks in the league and above, right? Because it's the one position. Steve Palazzolo at PFF made a great point. It's the one position where getting a starter in the first round isn't enough. You have to get somebody who's like top 12 for it to be considered a hit, right? But if we're going off that hit rate, it's only about 30% for first-round quarterbacks. Doesn't mean that there aren't guys drafted who could be starters, but we're not looking for starters. We're looking for Pro Bowlers. And if you're looking at the common threads between all the guys that end up being above average to good to elite QBs that are drafted in the first round, it's going to good situations. It's having good offensive lines, having at least one receiver you can rely on. You know, you look at CJ Stroud last year, and CJ was incredible, but he had a fantastic tackle tandem in front of him with Laremy Tunsil and Titus Howard. When the interior got healthy, they were great. Like, it was a good offensive line. You got Nico Collins, you got Tank Dell, you got Dalton Schultz, Singletary, like Bobby Sloak was a great play call. Like, there was stuff there to help Stroud be Stroud. Whereas you look at, you know, say Trevor Lawrence, his first year in Jacksonville, and what happened there. Like, it's if somebody as talented and as gifted as Trevor Lawrence can have the rookie year he did, I think that tells you how much situation plays into this thing. So I'm rooting for JJ to go to Minnesota, honestly, because I want him to succeed, and I feel like that's a place he could succeed.
And you bring up a great point about CJ Stroud, because all the stuff we talk about, all the traits, right? when you're in the great situation, all those traits are not maximized, right? Mm-hmm. CJ Stroud, accurate thrower, right? Someone who sees the field well, can layer the ball at multiple levels of the field, has the arm talent to drive it down the field. You saw it with CJ this year, his escapability too, to get outside mm-hmm. of structure when he has to. And all that stuff gets maximized when you have the talent around him. Like you mentioned, Bobby Slogan, interesting story. I played for his dad in Green Bay.
Really?
Yeah, he was my DB coach. So I knew Bobby Slogan when he was a young kid. He'd be at practice with us. You know, now you turn on the TV and he's calling plays for the Houston Texans. You know, you talk about someone who rose quickly and look, well-deserved. He's an outstanding play caller. And he always kept CJ Stroud, you know, on point, you know, in terms of setup and scheme and the route deployment. They were a step ahead of teams consistently throughout the season. That's why they went to the playoffs. But to your point, Brett, that stuff, it means so much. You know, it's the same. Look, I'll be honest. When I was playing in the league as a safety, everyone wanted to go to Baltimore and Pittsburgh, right?
Mm-hmm.
Because they would just throw you interceptions. Ball would just fall out of the sky. You had these front sevens that were so good, right?
Yeah. Now,
you had average traits as safety. Someone like me, you can go there and have a season of 4 to 5 picks, just playing cover two. You know, oh, here's another overthrow. Oh, the quarterback's panicking again. The quarterback doesn't want to get hit again. Let's get the ball out. All of a sudden, the falls right to you. So it matters for everything, but that's not, you know, highlighted as much because you're safety, you know. But when you talk about quarterback, that situation means so much. And Brett, you bring up some great points. We see it every year. You know, even here in Chicago, I don't think Justin Fields by any means is a finished product as a quarterback yet. But look at the situations he was in, multiple head coaches, a year they tried to lose. You know, think about that. Hard to develop a quarterback when you're trying to lose games.
And when you're starting his first starts against Myles Garrett and we're running five-man protections all day. Yeah, that's going to go well.
Yeah, remember that Washington game. Look, there are times when you want to run empty because you can define it for your quarterback, right? You can see it spread out. You can see if it's man or zone, little short motion. There's benefits to empty. But when you don't have the strongest offensive line, and you're playing one-on-one, and they can scheme Myles Garrett to be one-on-one every time they want. It's a tough start. So, yeah, that position is such a unique thing, and that's why it's also from perspective of us is so hard to grade and to project because we don't know the situation they're going to be in.
We'll get back to the show and talk about more draft prospects in just a second, but first, one quick word from our sponsor to help make this show possible, LinkedIn. Hiring can be a hugely stressful process. Brett and I know the feeling as small business owners who are potentially looking to hire a production assistant very soon. We know what goes into expanding your team, and it's really, really hard. But LinkedIn is here to make it as easy as possible. There are more than a billion professionals on the LinkedIn network, and 86% of the 2.5 million small businesses that use LinkedIn report getting a qualified candidate to apply to their job postings within 24 hours. So if you're hiring, this is the place to be. We know there's a lot of competition out there to hire the best possible candidates for your business. So if you're a small business owner like me and Brett, and you need to add talent to your team to achieve goals in 2024, LinkedIn Jobs will help you find the candidates that you want to talk to faster than ever before. Try posting your available job for free at linkedin.com/bootleg and see what they can do for you. Again, that's linkedin.com/bootleg to post your available job for free. Terms and conditions apply. Thank you again to LinkedIn for sponsoring today's show. And with that, let's get back to it.
Well, you know, JJ played against a lot of really talented defenders in the Big Ten. Very few more talented than Cooper DeJean, fellow Iowa Hawkeye DB. Some people say he's an outside corner. Some people say he's a safety. Some people say he's a nickel. My answer is yes, all the above. But perhaps most importantly, and I want to get your take on this first before we dive into the rest of Cooper DeJean. Return man with the new kickoff rule. I think that's an underrated value you're getting for Cooper DeJean. He's a really, really good returner. He's 200 plus pounds, really fast. I feel like there's very few players that I think benefited more from that rule change in terms of draft stock than Cooper DeJean. What do you say about that?
I agree. And on punt returns too. I think if you're grading him as a punt returner right now, I think it's fair to say he has all pro upside. Okay. Because that's how good he is as a punt returner. You know, certain traits you look for. One, he's fearless. Okay, fearless in going through traffic and fielding the football. Excellent ball skills, as we know, as a defensive back. Great contact balance. Outstanding ball carrier vision to play in space. That's what a returner needs. And the straight line burst to go. you know, saw it in return versus Michigan State, saw the one versus Minnesota that they stole from us when that was called a fair catch all of a sudden. But
yeah, he said in quotation.
How do you about feel that, about Matt?
I'll tell you what, we had Coach Fleck was at school in the last recruiting period. And I didn't say anything about it, but I wanted to say it. So I was like, hey, Coach, you stole that one from us. But I did.
That's great.
But, you know, there's no question in terms of his special teams ability. That also, think about him playing gunner. You know, there's a lot of things he could do for you on special teams outside of what he brings. Like you mentioned, the versatility in the secondary. But as a kick returner, the new rules are so interesting to me. Because I'll tell you what, when I played, it was the Wild West. Okay, there were no rules. You had a four-man wedge. I remember running to Dan Campbell. You're a 40-yard head start and running to Dan.
That must have hurt really bad.
It's horrible. I always tell people it's like, you know, get a 40-yard head start and run into your garage door. That's kind of what it was, right? And you couldn't chop, so you try to go through the hip bone, really, of the wedge and try to slice through. Now, you know you're not going to make the tackle. You were just giving your body up so someone else can make the tackle. That's part of attacking the wedge. We also had these trap blocks that there was no rule. So you get, you know, a 30-yard run, and you would drop the crown of your helmet on somebody. And that's just how the game was played. Now, obviously, I understand why they changed the rules, why they, you know, again, the ball was 5 yards back, too. We kicked off, I think, from the 30 back then. And the kickers didn't have the training. You know, even the combine numbers, and I'm getting off track here, I'm sorry, but everything has changed so much in terms of nutrition, the science behind training. Athletes are stronger and faster than they ever have been, and that will continue to happen. But the kickers, you didn't have 10 kickers with the leg strength like a Justin Tucker to put it out of the end zone every time. So it was an actual return. I think there was much more of a premium back then on straight line speed cover guys who were willing to play violent every time and understand the risks of running down and kickoff. There's times you might not get up. That's just how it was. But the new rules are cool to me because it's almost like being an offensive coordinator, right?
Mm-hmm.
We're going to scheme outside zone here. We're going to scheme split flow zone. We're going to take someone and bring them back and kick out to the backside. I think it's going to be so interesting. And again, what is the premium now on in terms of the coverage guys? These are now someone who are active with their hands, can stack and shed and get off of blocks immediately, can cut off and play cut off and force to the ball carrier, different than someone could play at top speed and tackle in the open field. It's a much different in terms of the traits you're looking for with cover guys. But I agree with Cooper. That's someone who has the vision, has the short area burst to go, and can bounce off of tacklers. So I agree. That special teams aspect is, I think, a huge part of his grade. And I think scouts will really take that into account when setting their final board is, look, we're not just getting a defensive back. We're getting someone that can change the game for us in special teams.
In terms of somebody who is a DB, where's his best spot to you?
That's a great question. I think that's something you're going to have to find out in through minicamp. Not so much minicamp because that's kind of fake, but really in training camp and the preseason games. I think this is something I'm guilty of all the time as we talk about versatility, whether it's on the defensive front or in the secondary. And that's great to have that versatility, but day one of minicamp, you got to line him up somewhere. Okay, so he's got to be a corner. He's got to be a safety. He's got to be a star. I call it an adjuster, you know, that slot safety inside. He's got to be one of those three spots. So I think on day one, if I'm coaching Coop, I want him outside of corner. So I want to test him. I want him to compete. I want to see what he can do outside versus NFL competition. Because here's a couple things about Cooper. Outstanding backfield vision. I use that term all the time. So that's when you're off in man or off in cover three quarters where you can get to depth and read through the receiver into the backfield. He's made so many plays doing that because of that backfield vision. There's no question he can match in man. At times when he opens his hips, he can be a little segmented or a little rigid. And that's happens to a lot of DBs. We can go through this entire class and talk about lower body hip tightness. I was the perfect example of that. I was extremely tight. And when I'd open my hips, man, it was probably not a good thing for our defensive team that day.
But you could hit.
I could hit. I could play top down the ball. But look, I think Cooper has a physical mentality to him. I think he will set an edge and tackle for you. And a lot of defensive back coaches really stress that. Some don't. You know, some want someone who exclusively makes plays in the football. I understand that. Every defensive back coach is the same. But for me, from my perspective, it's one of the first things I look for. Are you a tone setter? Do you have that willingness to tackle and set an edge for our defense, because if you can't set an edge, you can't win football games. And it always comes down to the perimeter. A lot of times when you get outside, it comes down to the perimeter. Cooper can do that all day long. I know Cooper personally. Obviously, Coach Ferentz is very high on Cooper DeJean because of what he brings in terms of those intangibles, like we're talking about with JJ, in terms of his football character, his football leadership skills. There's no question about that with Cooper DeJean. It just depends on, again, situation we talk about, right? And does he go to a place, let's say Philadelphia at 22 with Vic Fangio, ideal fit for him. We can play quarters, play off the football. He's going to play their man schemes when they want to play man. They'll bring their zone pressures where he can read into the backfield and drive top down, make plays in the football. You know he's going to tackle for Vic. What about Todd Bowles in Tampa Bay? You know, I'm thinking of teams in that range, you know?
Yeah.
And they have a need, too. They have a need opposite Dean right now. More cover three in Tampa, more cover three fire zone in Tampa, where he can pedal, the same things we're just talking about. But we always have to remember that in third and 2-6, third and 7-10, pretty much everyone's in a challenge, right? We're going to play man coverage. We got to get off the field. And I think Cooper does have those man skills. It's just, will he consistently, when he opens his hips and transitions on the ball, can he do that consistently against a Justin Jefferson, right? Because that's what you're asking of corners, right? That's what you're asking.
Can anybody?
No, you still got to ask if they could do it, right?
Yeah.
You got to ask if you could do it. I remember this. We were playing the Steelers, and I was manned up in the slot versus Randall L. And I played against Antoine in college when he was quarterback. And I finally came to the sideline, and I told the coach, I'm like, this is not good for us, man. We need to get out of this now.
Yeah.
I'm going to get embarrassed. The team's going to get embarrassed, you know? So you find that stuff out really quick, what you can and cannot do, because the competition is so great. The game is so fast. But, you know, I have a very strong belief in what Cooper can be as a pro player. I think he is wired to be a professional athlete in terms of how he trains, how he prepares. And again, what he brings in terms of the special teams impact. And again, Brett, maybe he is that slot adjuster inside. Maybe he can make a home doing that. Maybe he's in a split safety coverage defense where he can play strong safety or play both sides of the field and has half field range, can play top down in the football. You know, because that's interesting. I know we're not going to get into the safety position today, but it's hard to find guys at post range now, right?
Mm-hmm.
That's why McKinney got paid in free agency. You know, I think that someone like Kalen Bullock's going to draft her higher than people think because he can play center field. You know, a lot of these safety, Jaden Hicks from Washington State, look, I want him playing top down the ball all the time. I love watching him play. But what you're getting now is really just right and left safeties because we're going to play quarters. We're going to play cover two. We'll spin late. And when we spin late, we're trying to, you know, change the picture for the quarterback. So can you just stay over the top, you know, in the deep third? But how many true playmaking safeties are there in the deep middle of the field? They're hard to find. They get paid in free agency and they get drafted high because it is a hard skill to find. Now, do I think Cooper's a post safety? I don't. But again, if he's playing safety where you have that late rotation, he can spin to the post and protect you over the top. And that's what you're asking right now because this league has changed so much. And it's an explosive play league. On defense, can you hit the quarterback and take away explosive plays, right, and create turnovers? And on offense, can you create explosive plays? It's become this back and forth of doing that. Because that keeps you in football games. It gives you a chance to win. Everyone has enough talent to win on Sundays, well, most everyone. So can you get to a situation where you haven't given up those explosive play defensively, and now you're in the football game in the fourth quarter? You know, so that's really how I see the game going from a defensive perspective.
Yeah, we talk about landing spot and with quarterbacks, but I think with players like Cooper who have versatility, it's equally important, if not more important. And where I come down on the debate about where Cooper's best position is I want the team that drafts him to have a plan. I don't care what that plan is, but I want them to have an organized plan, because a lot of times when you see guys who are incredible athletes, very versatile, fail is when they go into situations and the team goes, we'll just kind of do a little bit of everything with you on your rookie year. That's hard. It's hard. You know how hard it is to transition from the college level to the pro level at any position. There's a lot inside the building, outside the building. There's a ton going on. And to say when you get to the football field, we're going to put you over here. We're going to put you over there. We're going to put you on this guy today. Oh, you got to learn this today. There's enough when you have one position, when you have three or four or five, if we're talking about special teams, that's too much for almost anybody. I want them, I don't care if they move them around, but I want them to have an orderly plan. Like you said, day one, hey, you're starting in the slot. You're starting as a star. You're starting as a safety, whatever it is. If you want to start him outside, great. You're outside. You're going to be one of our boundary guys. Great. We'll see if you can do that. If a week in we figure out, kind of like you said against Randall L., this isn't the greatest thing for us, cool. You're not done. We'll take you to the next stage of the plan. But we're just not going to mix and stir every day, because I've seen a lot of development that's gone off the rails when teams don't have that defined plan. And because it's tempting. He's a great athlete. He's played all over the place. He has all kinds of versatility, but do it in an orderly fashion for his sake and for yours. That's all I want from the team where he lands.
No, I agree. And also, where are you going to sit in the meeting room, right? Where's your first meeting going to be? What are you learning? What's being taught to you? You know, Isaiah Simmons is a great example of that, I think.
I was just going to bring him up. It was like four positions. Yeah,
I remember we did the draft show for NFL matchup, and we were going through Simmons tape, and he was an electric player in college level. There's no question about it. But I remember a play he made against, I think it was Ohio State, maybe it was the national semifinal game, where he's coming out of the deep half and overlapping the fade ball. I'm like, this he's going to make it because he has all the talent. And to your point, it's never about the talent. I mean, if you're good enough to be invited to the combine and get drafted, you are talented enough to play in that league. But it goes back to the steps we were just talking about. Is it the situation? Are you being properly coached? Are they moving you around so much where you can't even decipher what you're doing anymore? You know, where do I put my eyes? My eyes are much different at corner than they are at safety. Much different in the slot. Responsibilities completely change in the slot, right? And I have to have the traits to play in a slot. The slot, playing slot at any level is extremely challenging because there's a lot of stress put on you. You are the key part of that defense, especially how the game is played today. And you got to know where to put your eyes. You got to know where your run pass keys are and what you're looking for. What are you looking for pre and post snap? All this stuff matters. So if you're not repping that, right, guys? If you're playing corner for 7-on-7 and all of a sudden team, you're in the slot, well, we're not helping the kid out here. We're not coaching him, you know, because everyone has to coach. You still have to coach. And I think we forget about that sometimes is because you have the best talent in the world, but you still have to coach. You still have to coach and develop. Those years – especially guys are coming in the league much younger now than when I played. 21 to 24, those developmental years are crucial to establishing a career in that league. Obviously, everyone knows you need to stay healthy, but if you're a healthy player, those years are so important.
I mean, Hassan Reddick spent half of his early prime there trying to convert him to a linebacker, an inside linebacker.
I know.
You know? So it's sometimes you go to the wrong team.
Yes, that's kind of the point of the show today, right? What we're always talking about. And there's no question if you watch Simmons – college tape, you say, yeah, he's a top 10 player in terms of traits and talent, physical tools. He had everything you want, you know, but again, mismanagement of the position, mismanagement of development, it can really slow down development, slow down careers.
Last player we're going to talk about for your draft enigmas gets out of the upper Midwest, and we're going to talk about Jared Verse from Florida State. Again, tons of talent. Everybody's talking about him, certainly in the top 15 to 20 picks for sure. First or second edge off the board is likely for him. What do you see about Jared Verse, and why is he an enigma to you?
Enigma to me just because of the analysis, because it's so wide, right? Because you'll see people who have Verse rated right after Dallas Turner, right? Mm-hmm. Or he's a possibility for the Bears at number 9. You know, the Bears, an edge rusher is a possibility for the Bears. And then you'll see other people have him in the late 20s. Right, so to me, that's a big swing. In my opinion, when you're talking about top 10, those are different traits. Those are different physical tools than everyone else in the draft. That's why they're being drafted that high. I mean, Dallas Turner, let's be honest. Dallas Turner needs to develop a much deeper toolbox of pass rush moves, right? Mm-hmm. But he has the uncoachable traits. He's explosive. He runs in the 4.4s. He can match running backs in the backfield. He can do things that, from a coaching perspective, I can't teach. Mm-hmm. You know, no one could teach that to me, right? I don't have those traits, okay? But he does. So that's my question on Verse. Do we think he has top 10, top 15 traits, or is he a back half of the first round type of player? I'll tell you what, from a coaching perspective, I always look at this, and maybe this is a negative for me, but I always look at guys I would want, if I was a coordinator, I'd want on my defense, right? That's one of the first things I look at. You know, do you have the play demeanor, right? Jared Verse, is relentless in my opinion, in terms of his effort level, his motor, someone that is consistently trying to pursue the football, whether you're trying to pursue the quarterback or pursue a ball carrier. That stuff jumps out to me right away. And then you look at explosive first step off the ball, can attack the edges of offensive tackles. You know he can rush with power. Watch the rep against Florida. Watch the rep against Louisville in the ACC championship. When he's taking offensive tackles, I don't care if they're freshmen. I don't care if they play guard. I don't care about that. They're big dudes. And he takes them and he walks them back into the quarterback. Okay? That is real strength, real power. He's also what? What do I have listed at here? 254 pounds. Yeah. Right? So at 254, you're going to be, what position are you? A stand-up outside linebacker? I think he fits in multiple fronts. I think if someone could play in a 34, because we all know in true passing situations, it doesn't matter if you're 3-4 or 4-3, you're going to rush off the edge. And that's what you'll pay him to do. But I just really like the tape. He's highly productive in college. He played in a winning football team. There's not a lot of areas of his game where you can look at and say, well, this isn't good enough. This isn't good enough. There's always going to be details of every player that, again, and that I shouldn't use the term aren't good enough, that need to be developed. Okay, there are things that need to be developed, whether it's his leverage taking on blockers at the point of attack. There's things that Jared Verse can improve, and he will, because you have to improve in that league or you don't survive on Sundays. But in terms of what I see in the traits, I see a top 10, top 15 player that can play for a long time and be a very productive player on the edge, again, in multiple fronts, because of what he can do getting off the football and what he gives you also as a secondary rusher. What I mean by that is someone that when the quarterback steps up, he's not going to stop. Yeah. He doesn't stop. He keeps going. And, again, that's not a cool trait to talk about. We don't talk about it enough probably, but that effort, that relentless pursuit, and that demeanor where I'm going to play with high energy all the time, that matters to me.
It's funny. When I watched him, I knew you were going to like him because I knew that every former DB was going to like an edge like Jared Verse because he has a power component to his game. He's extremely strong. And if there's one thing DBs love, it's powerful edge rushers because compressed pockets make DBs money. It creates errant throws. It creates panicky throws. You talk about like going to Pittsburgh and getting 4 to 5 picks. Well, it's because they had a bunch of big dudes that would compress the pocket. And it's nice to have, really fast speed coming off the edge that can turn the corner and get the strip sacks and all that kind of stuff. But if we're looking holistically at what makes a defense go, consistently compressed pockets that just make quarterbacks nervous over the course of a game will generate more big play opportunities for a defense. So I knew you were going to like him just because I was like, oh yeah, he's the exact style that DBs love to be behind.
Well, to your point, look at the defensive profile of the Chicago Bears this season. That changed once they got Montez Sweat. They started taking the ball away at a consistent rate, right? Because to your point, Brett, that's what Montez Sweat can do, as he can drive offensive tackles back into the lap of quarterbacks. And now, like you said, Brett, everything changes. Now you can't step up and throw. Now you can't reset your throwing window. Now your internal clock is increasingly sped up to the point where you're making poor decisions with the football. And that's what edge rushers can do. Is I always use the term defensive profile because that's where it starts. That's where it starts. That's why safety can now make plays. That's why a safety can flat foot read instead of backpedaling out of there because he knows the football has to come up. That's why I can be more aggressive. If I see an inbreaker in quarters, I'm going to get it. I'm going to get it. They're going to run a double move, maybe, but they're not going to have time, not with these guys.
Yeah.
I'm going to get that football. I'm going to be much more aggressive in terms of my play mentality because of what those guys can do up front.
It's a big reason why, Flores runs zero all the time. He's like, either I'm dying or you are. We're going to figure this out in the next 2.5 seconds.
I played for Greg Williams in Washington. We would call cover zero whenever. It was never off limits. I mean, he could ball me at the 50-yard line, and we're going to go. We're going to either make a play here or we're going to get beat, because when you speed up that clock of quarterbacks, things change. Things change when you get hit. That's just how football is. I always bring up, you have to hit the quarterback. Not necessarily the sack totals, but when you can hit the quarterback over the course of four quarters, the game's going to change. It's going to change because, look, I don't want to sit back there and get hit. None of us do.
Not from a guy like Jared Verse, that's for sure. And I think Verse's floor is extremely high because of all the reasons you mentioned. He plays with power. He can do the dirty work. He can set an edge. He can compress pockets. He can catch a quarterback when they step up because he has that relentless drive. My question with Verse is, where's the ceiling, right? Because if you're talking about top 10, people get real interested in ceiling. What's the max? Can he add those speed sacks around the edge to all that sort of what I will just call grunt and sweat, which is really necessary and will give you a role in the league for a long time, but it's not necessarily going to make people happy inside the top 10. He can be a top 20 player all day long with what he's got right now. Can he add to that and sort of pay off that even top 15 draft selection with those sort of high-end sack traits that people are looking for? Again, when they pick somebody up high, the requirements and the grading system, let's be honest, is different.
It is. An example of a player, and I'm not saying this is a true comp, but I remember in free agency, one player I struggled grading out in free agency was Trey Hendrickson, okay, when he's coming from the Saints, okay? Because Trey Hendrickson does not have elite traits as a pass rusher. I think we can all agree on that. But, man, is he relentless. Man, does he make a lot of plays. Yeah. And that's just, you know, that's part of his game is getting those secondary sacks, you know, getting hits on the quarterback. When the quarterback steps up, he never stops. You know, so there is a place for that, again, but is it worth the top 10? And I'm fascinated to see it because we've talked about
I think we all are.
You know, what do the Bears do at 9 is one of the, I think, the pivotal moments of the draft because they can go so many directions. What if Joe Alt slides? You can't pass him up, right? Not number 9, right? You know, there's just so many things that could happen. And what if Dallas Turner's there?
Yeah. Or Roma Dunze, you know.
Or what if there's a trade and Malik Nabers is there? You just don't know what
you
know. But you know, regardless, the Bears are going to be in a position where they can really help their football team immediately. I know we're off talking about the Bears, but you know that's okay.
But they're a fascinating team.
They are.
They really are.
Because I think we all agree they're going to draft Caleb Williams. And then what they do at 9 and how the top 10 plays out is going to be fascinating to me because someone's moving up. Someone's moving up to get a quarterback. So and that's going to alter everything. Everything we planned, right? Everything we thought of in our minds. This player fits here. It's all going to fall down.
Yeah, 2 months ago, I don't think anybody thought Marvin Harrison Jr. had a realistic shot at catching passes from Justin Herbert, and here we are.
Right. So, the Cardinals are another team. The Cardinals are going to sit at 4, really, with the amount of needs they have, and someone trying to move up to get a quarterback at that point, maybe? I don't know.
And they've got a ton of picks as well outside of that, and that's the table that they set last year in the draft to come into this draft. So it's one of the reasons that the draft is endlessly fascinating to all of us is because there are those storylines and they do go year to year. It's a different team every year in the NFL. Every team's needs shift. There are a lot of things that come up that are unexpected, both on the draft side and the pro side. And the way those things play together in the draft, it makes for a fascinating weekend. So we're certainly looking forward to that. Brett, you want to get into your enigma first?
Yeah, I was looking for somebody who, similar to J.J. McCarthy, you have familiarity with, you know, when they were coming up in the Chicago high school football scene. Also somebody who, is a DB in the Big Ten that you've seen plenty of, and that's Tyler Newbin. Some people have him as safety 1, some people have him as safety 4. What I'm trying to reconcile is the testing numbers worth the tape. And, you know, the testing numbers weren't great. The tape was great. So what do you do with this kind of player where one side of the coin is so good and one side of the coin wasn't?
I think it's a great discussion. Another player I'd throw in that, Brett, is Cameron Kitchen from Miami. Mm-hmm. Well, I really liked his tape, but then he had a subpar workout, just to be honest. It wasn't very good, wasn't explosive. And what I've learned in talking to people that are much smarter than me, it doesn't mean they're not a good football player. They can be an outstanding football player, but their ceiling might be limited because their lack of traits or lack of explosive traits at a position like safety, where you have to open, create range to the football. Okay, it's much different doing that in college than doing it versus Mahomes, right? Much different. Mm-hmm. So that's what I've always said is it doesn't mean that they can't play in the league, that they can't play a long time in the league. It's just that their overall ceiling might just be capped a tad because they don't have the explosive. And look, when you're looking at a defensive back, right, the 40, the broad jump and the vertical jump should all match, right? That's determines how explosive of an athlete you are. Okay. So will that still translate if you have poor testing numbers in those three areas? Yeah, you can still be a great football player. I always bring up Micah Hyde. I know, University of Iowa guy who was drafted by Green Bay. I want to say fifth round, maybe. Was it fifth?
I think. It was around there. Yeah, early day three. Yeah.
Yeah, and Micah ran in the 4.6s. You know, what wasn't a blazer coming out, but we all know he had an outstanding career because of other intangibles he has, other traits he has, how he sees the field. There's so many things that go into play in that position. And to your point, Brett, about Tyler Newbin, I really love the tape. Plays with a pro demeanor, has a pro frame, will run the alley and drop the hammer on you as a defensive back who tackles. And I won't say post-range, I'll say post-instincts, okay, because I think post-instincts matter too. The ability to get a jump on a play, because that means you're seeing things pre-snap. That means you're seeing things in terms of coverage, alignment, in terms of route tendency, down and distance, formation, personnel on the field. You are a very high-level processor from the flip side of it. We always talk about it's quarterback position, but it matters too as a defensive back. And you saw that with Newbin, the plays he made in the football. A lot of times he's breaking before that ball is coming out, right? That tells you that's how you get a jump. That's how you take a guy, Brett, who's, I'll say, a 4.62, but really on tape they're 4.48, 4.45 flat, and which is fast enough because their play speed increases so much because they see things faster than everyone else. I do think he has the ability to match versus tight ends because he has a frame for that. Not someone that you're going to put in the slot versus an upper-tier slot receiver. I think that's doing a disservice to safeties. And I think we struggle with that from an analysis perspective. I'm guilty of it, too, as we say, well, he can cover in the slot. That's fine, but it's 3rd and 2 to 6 to win a football game. You probably want your slot corner there, right?
Yeah.
So what I always use the term is cover down. If you're sending pressure off the slot, yeah, I could start at 10. Creep down, play catch man, you know, at 6'5". I can do that, right? Because I know the football is coming out. I think he has those traits to do that. From what I understand, an outstanding communicator on the field. Okay, that's another key part of playing that safety position is you have to manage that defense. You have to be a communicator. The best defenses at every level talk, and they talk all the time. And there's usually one player that leads it, you know, because that's where you get a jump on players. That's where, and look, from an offense perspective, because I've had offensive players tell me this, it's intimidating when you're going against a secondary that won't stop talking. They're calling everything out. It doesn't mean they're right at all, but they're always talking.
Yeah. Well,
sooner or later, they're going to be right. And you're going to say, oh, man, guys. Right? So always talk. You know, you want a communicator at that safety spot. And I think that's what Tyler Newbin can be. You know, to your point, he played at St. Charles North High School. I remember watching this huddle tape. It was a crossover study, watching another team and saying, you know, this kid's pretty good. I mean, this kid's a really good football player. Turns out to be a Division I player, plays at Minnesota. You know, the ball skills do matter. All right, you want safeties that can create, I use the term, on-the-ball production. He had 13 career picks. That's a lot. It's a lot in college, especially in the Big Ten. You know, it's a lot for the Big Ten where you still see some teams. Like, if you played against the University of Iowa, you're going to get outside zone, right? So you're not getting a ton of throwing volumes compared to other conferences. So 13 career picks is a big number. I think he's a day two pick. I would love to see him with the Houston Texans. That's where I'd love to see him.
You know,
the defense that is, you know, more defined in their coverages, right? You're going to play split safety. You're going to rotate late to cover three. You're going to be a top-down player. You know, that D'Amico Ryan's defense, that is really, like we were talking about before, it's kind of where the modern defense is going in the NFL. But I'd love to see him playing split safety, rotating to the post, running the alley. That, to me, would be a really good fit for him. And I think Houston has two, correct me if I'm wrong, I think they have 2 second-round picks. So it could be in that slot, one of those two slots.
I think they do, yeah.
Where I'd like to see him in terms of, like we've been talking about this entire show, in terms of system fit.
He'd be their Talanoa Funga.
Yeah. I was gonna say the second safety in San Francisco. I'm thinking of all those second safeties in San Francisco who played what I would call above their level when they played for D'Amico. And you throw a guy like Newbin who has great physical skills as far as I'm concerned. Yeah, the testing numbers weren't there, but you talked about the size. And the other thing is the length, right? You match that anticipation with the length, and that's how he gets, as a player on tape, what I wrote down is makes his own luck, right? He's in the right place at the right time. He doesn't have to be there the fastest because he's there first. And then he's got that great physical range to, whether that's, you know, drape an arm around a tight end and that short coverage that you were talking about, or, you know, yeah, he might be a step behind, but stick that hand up. Well, he's well over 6 foot long arms. That's a lot of safety to throw over. So I think that'd be a great fit for him. I think he's a really interesting player. My guy is Marshawn Nealon, defensive end out of Western Michigan. And the reason I think he's an enigma to me is the same thing that a lot of people are running into. Like, they get to his tape and they're like, why was this guy at Western Michigan? It turns out like he had offers and the boosters stepped up and kept him at Western Michigan. But I think a lot of people see a skill set that they don't necessarily expect to see from that league. And they're saying, are they right? So are they? Is Marshawn Nealon a top 50 guy? It feels like it to me. Where do you fall on Marshawn Nealon?
I did a lot of study on the edge rushers when I first started. And I'm always late because I do free agency for ESPN. So I'm kind of, you know, playing catch up at times, but you know, well, I always start with the safeties first. I'll be honest. I go safety, corner, and an edge.
Got to keep your priorities.
Yeah, I leave the offensive guys for last. But no, I really like him on tape. I think he's a physical player. I think he's got multiple counter moves. I think he has got light feet where he can set up offensive tackles, get him back on his heels. There's times where you use an inside spin move. He's a really good football player. And I agree. This is, I think, something important is, when you're getting down a non-power five player, right? Okay, you still have to, again, because everyone says, well, they're not playing the SEC, not playing the Big Ten. But again, study the traits. The draft is about traits and talent. Study those and try to project those. Okay, so you'll say, well, he should be productive. He's playing the MAC conference. That's fine to say that, okay. But again, do the traits project to the National Football League? That's what this discussion is about. Because we've seen so many players over time that have played non-power five conferences, that played in 1AA football that have been very productive in the National Football League. So to me, I'm with you. I think he's a top 50 player. I think he's a day two pick. And I think that's someone that could be schemed in terms of today's fronts, right? So today's fronts, these are the term loaded fronts, right? So when you get a loaded front, you're going to have your nose lined up as a zero. You're going to have, you know, your D tackle and your DN, right? And you're going to get three-man slide protection. Well, that's all one-on-one blocking. You're doing that so you can get the edge, the one-on-one. That's what you want to get, the one-on-one, the edge. If you have Aaron Donald, you want to get the one-on-one inside, right? We understand that. You know, but you want to get the edge one-on-one. And that's someone I think that can really benefit from playing in those schemed NFL fronts where, look, we're going to get you this one-on-one. You got to win this one-on-one. I think he's got the short area closing speed to where you're seeing so many out of those loaded fronts. You'll see two inside picks, right? Two vertical picks. Mm-hmm. And you loop the defensive end inside.
Yep.
Okay. He's got the ability to do that also. I think he's a powerful player. The effort level is there. I always look at effort level. But one of the players that stood out to me when I was watching edge rushers to start this process in my own, draft evals that, hey, this guy's got NFL traits. He needs to be in the right system again, like we always talked about. But he's got NFL traits that are going to translate to playing football on Sundays.
Yeah. 6'3", 267. 4.75 40, 35.5-inch vert. You're talking about that explosion. Was productive. You talked about the level, which is interesting. So 35.5 pressures, 28 hurries, 7.5 tackles for loss, plays the run and the pass. But interestingly enough, he made plays against Iowa, Mississippi State, and Syracuse. But all three of those games were early in the season. And I think people just kind of didn't get on the train because those were the biggest pieces of competition that he faced, and they were 3 weeks right in a row, and I think it was weeks 2, 3, and 4 in their season. And people just, and then he went on and played the rest of his conference schedule, and people kind of went, oh, whatever. If you go back and look at the tape against all those athletes at Iowa, at Mississippi State, from the SEC, that are gonna be playing in the NFL, he made plays against them too. So for me, I'm with you. I think Marshawn Nealon is definitely a top 50 talent. I think he is going to be one of the most interesting players in that, one of the most interesting early players that people go, where did he play? You know, who's this guy? Folks that don't follow the draft. I see the traits and the talent and the drive to come in and be successful in the NFL really quickly.
I agree with you too. And that range to me is probably the most pivotal part of the draft, right? You know,
correct.
The day two. Now the term everyone uses, how you build your roster, but you get really good football players there. You know, look, everyone's always about round one, which I understand because those are the players that everyone knows, right? Those are the players that are on all the highlights that you watch in the big time games during the college football season. in day 2 to 3, you can find guys that are going to play 7, 8, 9 years in the league and play very productive football because of the traits they have, right? And I agree with you on that. That's where I think he will go. Yeah, an edge rusher that can produce pretty quickly on Sundays because of the traits he has.
What I liked about how they used him, especially on third downs, like a can opener where they put him in front of the center. You remember how like Houston in the mid-2010s was used Jadeveon Clowney, where it's like, hey, here's our just giant hulking edge that we're going to stand up in front of the center, and he's going to look him dead in the eye and say, I'm going to cave you in right now, and there's nothing you can do about it. And they would have Marshawn Lynn do that. And, you know, we talk about pocket compression creating opportunities for a defense. I loved that they occupied both guards and basically declared a one-on-one with the center and Nealon and said, this is what's happening. You're going to have to deal with it. And very few teams could deal with it.
Yeah, well, the Packers used to do that too, as Za'Darius Smith.
Uh-huh.
That's what you're talking about. And Brett, you bring up a great point. We were just talking about it before is, you know, what you can do, how you can scheme your fronts down the league and how they're trying to find one-on-ones in every possible way, whether it's walking up linebackers, occupy a guard, right? You know, just to take advantage of protection counts and how to manipulate protection counts to get the exact rusher, the exact matchup you want. And that goes back to earlier we were talking before, versatility, right? Versatility along the defensive front, that's an example of that, right? Where you can align as an edge, where you can kick inside, where you can do things out of loaded fronts to create those matchups and those stunts that you want. This is a player that can do that. But I really liked Monte. Someone that jumps right away because of his play style, his demeanor, obviously the production, but someone who has the traits, you say, well, you know what? You put him with NFL players around him and a very well-coached defensive front. This is someone who can be productive and play a long time in the league. And that's what, again, I believe day 2 and day 3 is about.
Before we let you get out of here, I do want to give you one more opportunity to gush about your kids and talking about the life of being a high school football coach. This time last year wasn't as big of a topic of conversation, but it definitely is now, you know, with the consolidation of college football and how much more money has been injected into it by boosters and everything over the last 12 months. As a high school football coach with kids now going to SEC programs and Big Ten programs and Div 2 and Div 3, how are you helping these kids navigate the NIL world, which is now a big part of recruitment in itself, and how they basically have to become business people at age 17. How are you guys as coaches helping these kids deal with that new reality?
Well, the one thing I've done is with NIL, because it is still new to, you know, for someone who's a high school coach, but one thing is the ability to manage money, and high school kids and their parents don't really know how to do that from a perspective of an athlete's point of view, right? It's different. We're not talking about investing in mutual funds. We're not talking about building a portfolio for your retirement. We're talking about immediate money that's given to you, and it's a lot of money at sometimes. The first thing is to dedicate time to finding a financial manager for a college athlete because you need that.
Mm-hmm.
Because you need that. Because this is money to start off with that you can grow and you can develop, right? Because I'll be honest, when I was at the University of Iowa, if I would have had that type of money, I would not know what to do with it. I would not. Yeah. I was good with going to the bar when they had $1 Busch Lights. I was good with that. You know, that was something I could handle financially, right? And I'll tell you, I used to write for the Daily Iowan, the school paper. Okay, that's where I started as a journalism major. And during the season, I wrote a column every week, and I got $8. NCAA said I could not accept it because it was in season.
Seriously.
So think about where this changed from that.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
$8. It's eight beers.
Eight Busch Lights. That's what it was.
Right. Taking away my Busch Lights here. I'm not so worried about the dollars, but can I accept the Busch Lights?
Think about how much it has changed to what we're talking about right now.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We're talking about kids getting six-figure deals to play college football, right? It is tough. The one thing I always stress to our kids is I understand the idea of wanting NIL. I want the NIL deals for the kids I coach too because I think it's a great start in life. I think it's a great start in life, and every college kid deserves an opportunity that the guys I play with did not get, okay? But also – finding the right NIL deal that also finds the right environment to you. Because ultimately, you got to compete, okay? You got to compete, and you have to be comfortable to compete. You want to go to a school where you feel like it is home to you. And I always tell our kids, you will walk on one of these campuses, and you'll say, this is it for me. That's how it was when I went to Iowa. I knew right away when I walked there, and you know, even before I met Coach Fry and my future teammates, I remember telling my folks, I'm like, this is the place. It just feels like the right place for me. Okay, so on before the NIL, right, is this the right place for you? Because you're going to be able to find NIL deals. It's going to get to a point where everyone is going to get an NIL deal. But don't forget to put yourself in that position where you're okay waking up at 6 in the morning every day. You're okay at the off-season workouts, which in college football are very challenging. You're okay knowing that you're still going to be restricted in terms of your time socially because you're a college athlete. You're going to go to practice. You're going to go to school. You're going to go to training table at night. You're going to go to study hall as a young player. That's going to be your routine. Sometimes it's not very fun. So one, do you love football? You have to love it. You have to love it to be successful at that level. And also being in a place where you're so comfortable that, you know what? If there's a kid in front of me, I'm not going to leave. I'm going to go beat him up. Okay. This place means a lot to me. And look, we didn't have those opportunities. So when I played, if you left, you were out for a year. I had two pro safeties in front of me, Damian Robinson, who got drafted by the Jets, and Kerry Cooks, who got drafted by Minnesota. So I was behind two NFL defensive backs. So I had to wait my time. You know, you play on special teams. And also I came in as a quarterback. So I was already behind. You know, I remember I played quarterback in the scout team as a red, you know, my red shirt year. Mm-hmm. And then when we went to play Washington in the Sun Bowl, I moved over to defensive back. So I hadn't backpedaled in a year. I've been throwing passes, you know, running option plays. So there was time for me where I really had to develop. And there was hard days. I tell my kids, oh, there's going to be very hard days where everything goes wrong. You're going to have a bad practice. You're going to get, you know, you're going to lose a lot of matchups to an upperclassman or a guy that's going to the league. And you're going to start to question if it's the right place for you. Everyone goes through it. There's nothing wrong with that. But just remember, if you pick the right place, you'll work through that adversity and say, this is the right place for me. I'm going back to practice tomorrow. I'm going to win those matchups. Even if I don't, I'm still going to go back to practice. I'm going to try to improve an area of my game every single day. And I tell our players all the time, the guys, the kids are coached now. This game is, to me, has always been about winning plays. That's it. You know, we talk about this as analysts and, you know, we always talk about the critical game moments, the special situations, what you do in the fourth quarter. Before you even get to that, you got to win certain plays to get there, right? So if you're having a tough day as a player, find a way to win some more plays. Okay? Because that can change the entire course of your day, the entire course of how you feel from a self-scouting perspective. And then the NIL money is just, that's the bonus right now. Because if you're in a great place and you love the place, you love to compete, you understand that you're going to have some tough days. You're going to have to go against NFL competition, and you might not get immediate success. And yeah, that's something that's kind of been lost right now is, well, I was good in high school, so when I get there, I'm going to be the best. You're not. Just something we're talking about right now with these quarterbacks going to the National Football League. You don't think they're going to have tough days? They're going to have really tough days. That's part of growing as an athlete, right? Part of growing your football character. So that's my answer in a long roundabout way.
No, I loved it. I loved it.
That's a great answer. I love a lot about that. There's a lot of pieces to that. And I think it speaks to the change. We talk about the change on the field. We spent a whole episode talking about, hey, it's different now. You know, you need different skills. You need to train, adapt, and think differently to play football. And that's the on-the-field stuff. And this is the off-the-field stuff. And it's a huge part. It sets the stage for all these players, whether they're young pros or younger pros. Because if you're getting paid, you're a pro. So, you know, college players are pros now. And it is a lot that we don't talk about that has a lot to do. We talk about situation. That's your situation in mm-hmm. college, right? That's your structure. That's your place where you're going to learn or have the ability to, and whether you stay or whether you go, it's a very different landscape. And it's so cool that you can share that from sort of both above and below. That's perspective that it's just hard to get. And we really appreciate you sharing it with us.
Well, I appreciate it. Look, I'm not against transfer. I'm not saying that. I mean, sometimes there are situations where it's more beneficial for you, not just as a football player, but as a person, okay, to go to a different situation,
yes,
which might make you grow more. So I'm all for that. But what my point of it is this, a couple of bad days doesn't mean that it's over.
Right.
You have to find a way to work through that. You know, and everything we do in life, but especially athletics, is that those are the days that really make you better. They do. I remember playing scout team and calling my dad and saying, hey, this isn't working out. Every time I drop back, you know, they're putting the crown and helmet on me and knocking me out. Because Coach Fry, back then. I was like, well, by scouts, I had a red jersey on too. It meant nothing. Well, Bobby Diaco, who used to be the coordinator at Notre Dame, the head coach at UConn, Bobby was a starting middle linebacker. You know, Northern Jersey, tough. And yeah, there were some tough days, right? Because back then, teams still ran the option. So I'm sitting in the option. I'm keeping the ball right as I pull it out of the mesh point.
You know it's coming.
You're horrible. And those are some tough days, though. And look, I never transitioned in terms to being – I thought I was going to be this all Big Ten quarterback, and like every 18-year-old does. And it didn't work, okay? So at that point, I had to reset and refocus and say, okay, this is going to be my new path. This is going to be my new path. But it's not going to be immediate success. I'm going to have to cover kicks. I'm going to have to play on punt and punt return. Do the front line of kickoff, which is the worst job in the world because it's the hardest job in the world. Run backwards. The guy that runs a 4-4 at top speed, get in front and block him in the middle of 53 yards. You know, it's an impossible task. But those are the things that make you who you are in terms of your football character and your personal character. And that's what I stress to our kids is that's why this game is the best. Okay, nothing against other sports. All my boys are multiple sport athletes. But this game is different in terms of what it teaches you and the lessons you get from it that really prepare you for more things outside of football.
Yeah, I think, you know, just as a capper, I agree that transferring isn't inherently bad, but you got to transfer for the right reason, right? You know, some guys transfer after their freshman year because they don't immediately start and get snaps and stuff like that. And it's like, first of all, you're 18 going up against 20-year-olds. There's a lot of physical development between 18 and 20. You're probably just not ready to go. You know, if you're a corner who's coming in at $155, sorry, dude, you need 20 more pounds before we can let you on the field, right? Especially in the SEC or Big Ten or anything like that. And so I think some kids, they transfer too early because they want to get on the field somewhere, which is inherently valuable as well, but I almost feel like sometimes that does them a disservice because once they get to the NFL, you can't just transfer if you're not playing as a rookie. You got to learn how to fight for the job, right? And again, there's perfectly valid reasons to transfer. Some guys want to go back home. Some guys want to get away from home. You know, some guys, they're 3 years in and they're still not getting snaps. Okay, yeah, fine, transfer. Go for your senior year. Go somewhere where you can play. Like, I totally get it. But I lament the guys that like go to a blue blood program like Alabama. They don't play as a true freshman because they got some other five-star in front of them. And then they immediately leave. And sometimes I feel like they don't know what they have until they're gone. We just saw a kid go to Iowa and then transfer back to Alabama like a month later. You know, so it's like sometimes I feel like they do it too early. And I think they know they do it too early once they get to the new school. And they start realizing like, oh, I still got to compete here too.
Yeah. And the ultimate thing about that is eventually you have to compete, right? You can't, you're going to have to compete. Mm-hmm. Whether you transfer once or twice, there's still going to be someone there. Okay. So you're always going to have to compete. So to my point, when we started this, put yourself in a position by choosing the right program that forces you to compete, that you want to compete at, that when you put that gear on, it means something to you and you want to go out and compete because that's, always, and we all know this. Once you become a starter in college, guess what they're doing? They're recruiting your replacement, right? Mm-hmm. That's how it works. So you might be a starter, but guess what? It doesn't mean you stop competing because the freshman coming in might be a 4-star safety, right? Because that's what happens in the NFL. The minute you get drafted, and outside of a certain number of players, they're looking to replace you. So if you don't play at a level that's productive enough to produce winning football for that organization, they're going to get you out of there. And so it's always about competition, always about competition.
Well, this was an amazing discussion. Again, we're not going to take too much of your time, but we always love having you on, you know, talking about your kids at IC Catholic. It's a great program there. You know, talking about, you know, your time in the Big Ten, your time in the NFL, everything got going on with ESPN. One of the best people in the business, and we could not possibly thank you enough for your time.
Well, guys, I appreciate it. I always have fun. You guys are excellent at what you do. I've said this before. Very professional at what you do, and when you're excellent at what you do and when you're very nice people like you guys are, that just opens up endless opportunities. I think you guys are on the right path. Love what you do. I can't thank you enough.
Always great to have Matt on the show. Provides such a different perspective as a former player and as a coach. you know, and somebody who's been around some of these guys since they were teenagers. It's great to hear from him. EJ, any parting thoughts before we get out of here?
I love Bowen. He's got such a tremendous perspective. Again, all the way from the Pop Warner side through high school, college, his own experience in college, the players he still knows at his alma mater in Iowa through college. Of course, he has his pro experience and then went on to be a pro broadcaster as well on ESPN, a pro analyst. So just pretty much, there are very few people that have that many windows into the game and is as willing to share them as Matt is. So one of my favorite guests all the time just drops story after story that you're like, what? Wait, you did? Oh, yeah, you were there for that. That's right. And it's that firsthand experience is tremendous. Just love Matt and love the fact that he enjoys coming on the show enough to keep doing it.
It's like, yeah, what do you mean you played for Bobby Slowick's father? I didn't even know that Bobby Slowick's dad was a coach, let alone.
He's my position Bowen. Coach in Green Bay. And you're like, of course he was. Yeah, of course. And those stories just keep coming with Matt. And it's this richness of football experience that started a long time ago. And he's just continued to kind of cultivate and grow that by staying involved in the game, by becoming a high school coach, by just continuing to do things in football that he hasn't done before. And I love that. It's just a great, great story.
We'll be back soon with another interview. I want to say the Mina episode's coming out after this one, and then I think it's DJ after that, and then I think it's Jordan Reed after that. So again, they're all coming fast and loose here between now
soon
and the last week of April. We also got the Mo Camara interview should be out before this. And then we also got Mason McCormick, Garrett Greenfield, Rabbit Taylor Demerson. We got Taj Washington, I think Malik Washington, Renardo Green, Jaren. There's a lot, okay? There is a lot that we have recorded that's going to be out over the next few weeks. So if you liked this, hopefully you'll like that.
You like that?
Want to thank all of our executive producers once again, Iken, Consti, Andrew, Liam, Connor, and Mike L. They are the ones who have footed the bill for this show during draft season because they are in the EP tier over on Patreon. So if you guys are also interested in becoming EPs on Patreon or just even lower tier supporters on Patreon to help pay our bills when we go to Dallas for the Shrine Bowl every year to get these interviews, that would be very much appreciated. We can only make this show because of support from people like you guys, and we really, really couldn't make it without you. So thank you, thank you, thank you once again. We'll be back very soon with the next show, whoever that happens to be. And until then, later. Take care.
One, two, three, four. Those are numbers, but you already knew that. If you want to know what number you're going to pay each month for your car, use Kelley Blue Book My Wallet on AutoTrader. They're really good at numbers. AutoTrader.